Right, so Itamar Ben-Gvir turning up to the Knesset in a bright yellow noose pin is one of those moments where the performance finally catches up with the policy, isn't it? Because you don't need to be a legal scholar or anything like that to see what a man is telling you when he walks into a parliamentary committee dressed like the executioner while more than 100 Palestinian detainees have died on his watch in detention. You do not need insider briefings to understand what it means when he praises soldiers who shoot surrendered men in Jenin and then tries to promote the officer responsible. And you certainly do not need a UN mandate to work out why states are starting to bar him from entering their borders. You just have to have a look at that noose and look at the bodies and ask why anyone is still pretending the two things are not connected. He might want to put a noose around the neck of Palestinians, but his antics, going consistently without meaningful sense here, are placing it around the neck of Israel itself instead. Right, so Ben-Gvir walking into the Knesset wearing a bright yellow noose lapel pin is not a one-off stunt, is it? It's the straightest expression yet of what he is doing with the carceral system he is in control of, he is the minister of, and what the Israeli state is now preparing to put in plain sight. He and his Otzma Yehudit colleagues, Jewish Power, as their party is called, sit on the National Security Committee with little nooses on their lapels while they debate a bill that would formalise the death penalty, but only for Palestinians, on so-called nationalistic grounds, and he sits there cheerfully explaining that hanging is one of several options, along with the electric chair and lethal injection. At the same time, an Israeli news investigation is reporting that at least 110 Palestinian detainees have died since he took over the National Security Ministry, a spike so far beyond historic figures that even a cautious human rights NGO tally of 46 deaths suddenly looks wildly conservative. You put those things together, along with how much he likes visiting prisons to taunt the inmates, and you do not get a minister who has gone too far in a vacuum, do you? You get an open declaration of what the system was already doing to Palestinians in the dark, now being dragged on stage as policy because this guy cannot stop showing us. The noose pin only works as symbolism because there is already a de facto death penalty in place inside the prisons under his watch, delivered by neglect, torture and beatings, instead of a formal sentence in a courtroom. That's where the reckoning angle lives here, not in some fantasy that Israel will suddenly find its conscience, but in the way this man's need to flaunt what he is doing is making it harder and harder for other states, courts, and even parts of Israel's own establishment to pretend they don't see it. The formal bill he is pushing is not a vague idea either. It is drafted to apply the death penalty mandatorily to Palestinians convicted of killing Israelis in circumstances defined as nationalistic, whatever the heck that means, and to strip judges of the ability to commute that sentence too. It lowers the voting threshold on the bench for imposing death from unanimity to a simple majority, and it explicitly blocks mitigation once a death sentence is handed down. So it's designed to bulldoze whatever few safeguards still exist against the death penalty in Israel. When he tells other Knesset factions that history will hold accountable anyone who opposes this law, that is not some stray line he's coming out with. It's a threat aimed at locking in a political consensus that killing Palestinians is not just permitted, but required. This is the same minister who's already questioned why soldiers are arresting so many Palestinians in Gaza instead of killing them on the spot, asking in a cabinet briefing whether all those who surrender really need to be taken into custody at all. So when he sits there with a noose badge on his chest, talking about hanging as a legitimate option, the line between showmanship and policy is not just blurred, it's gone. The real question is not whether he's serious, it is why anyone is still pretending that this is some marginal crank in the system when he holds the keys to the prisons and the internal security apparatus. Those prison numbers make that point more clearly than any speech ever could, though. Before Ben-Gvir took office, deaths in Israeli custody were already a scandal, tracked in detail by Palestinian organisations and Israeli rights groups and UN bodies, but they were counted in ones and twos each year, with decades worth of cases adding up to under 200. But since the Gaza genocide began in October of 2023, that has shifted into an entirely different regime, with Israeli reporting, now acknowledging around 110 Palestinian prisoners dead in less than 2 years under his watch, based on internal data from the prison service and the health system. Earlier research by doctors and legal groups had already found at least 46 post-October 2023 custody deaths, and they warned that the real figure was higher. But this new number confirms that the prison system is operating as a conveyor belt of fatal abuse. Testimony from released detainees, from families and from Israeli medical staff is consistent. People are being held in extreme overcrowding, in filth and darkness, starved, denied medical care until they collapse, stripped of sleep, beaten in repeated welcome parties every time they are moved somewhere. Israeli human rights reports describe more than a dozen facilities functioning as de facto torture camps and an underground prison in Rakafet being reopened under his tenure despite having been shut in the 1980s over inhumane conditions. When you stack those facts next to the 110 death figure, it's very hard to talk about poor conditions or isolated misconduct with a straight face anymore. What you are looking at is a lethal policy environment, even if the paperwork never quite calls it that. So into that context comes Jenin in the West Bank. Two Palestinian men emerge from a building, hands up, lifting their shirts to show they are unarmed. They're forced to the ground, kicked, then ordered back towards the doorway and shot at close range. The UN Human Rights Office has already said that what footage shows of the incident looks like a summary execution. Human rights organisations have described it as a war crime. Israeli media confirmed that three officers from the undercover unit are under investigation for unlawful killing, precisely because the evidence is so hard to argue with. But Ben-Gavir's response is to jump on social media to declare that the troops acted exactly as expected of them and that terrorists must die, and then within days to go and personally inform the commander of the same unit that he's promoting him to a higher rank. His public line is that the problem is not the killing of surrendered men on camera, but the very idea that Israeli soldiers might be investigated when they shoot people. You do not need to be a lawyer to see that when a national security minister tells the police and the army that this is exactly how they are expected to behave, he is digging the grave for any future claim that these acts are a matter of a few bad apples. And this is where the international blowback starts to sharpen, because the more openly he behaves like this, the easier he makes it for other countries and institutions to draw a straight line between policy, practice, and personal responsibility. The UN has already gone on record condemning his comments on the Jenin killings as abhorrent and underscoring that the rule of law means you do not shoot people who have surrendered and then call it normal. Israeli and Palestinian rights groups are using his statements and his promotion of that unit commander as evidence that extrajudicial killing is not just tolerated but actively rewarded, which is exactly the sort of pattern prosecutors at the International Criminal Court look for when they try to establish policy from above. At the same time, legal NGOs inside Israel are documenting how the prison system has become a network of torture sites since the war began, and linking that escalation to changes in law and policy made on his watch. When you have an Israeli minister pushing a death penalty bill for Palestinians while running a ministry that's already presiding over mass death in custody, foreign governments and courts have to work much harder to pretend there's some firewall between democracy and extremists here. European states are already moving beyond words in a way that centres him personally. The Netherlands has now declared both Ben-Gavir and his ally Bezalel Smotrich persona non grata, imposing entry bans on them over their role in inciting settler violence and calling for ethnic cleansing in Gaza, and is registering them as undesirable in the Schengen system. Slovenia has already barred them. Britain, Canada, Australia, New Zealand and Norway have also moved to restrict or bar their entry on similar grounds. Dutch ministers are openly talking about pushing for EU-level sanctions, trade measures and research exclusions if Israel refuses to change course. In parallel, the Dutch counter-terrorism agency has officially listed Israel itself as a security threat for the first time, citing disinformation operations and pressure on international courts in The Hague, which is a remarkable place to end up for a state that has spent decades branding itself as a Western partner in shared values. But none of this happens in a vacuum. Ben-Gavir's conduct is feeding into those decisions because he personifies the move from plausible deniability to open advocacy of racist violence. The detention system is also now so heavily documented that it's becoming a liability in its own right for Israel's allies. Israeli rights groups like B'Tselem, legal centres like Adala and torture monitoring organisations have produced detailed reports showing how prisons and military camps have been turning into spaces of systematic beatings, starvation, humiliation, sexual violence and medical neglect, with Palestinians from Gaza and the West Bank held incommunicado and denied lawyers, family contact or Red Cross access for weeks and months. Palestinian organisations and international NGOs have collected testimony from released detainees describing things like being stripped and left in the sun on gravel, being waterboarded, attacked by dogs, raped or threatened with rape and deliberately kept in filth as a form of punishment. UN reports now explicitly reference torture, including sexual violence, and count dozens of deaths in custody since October of 2023. Adala is pointing out that even when there is clear video evidence of abuse, the rare convictions that result can be as trivial as 7 months in jail for soldiers caught assaulting bound detainees. All of that is happening under a minister who is not only refusing access to external monitors in key facilities, but is lobbying to formalise execution as official sentencing policy. The point is that he is not an aberration grafted onto an otherwise benign system. He's the system with the mask taken off. He's the real face of it. That makes him uniquely dangerous to Israel's attempt to manage its image abroad. For years, Israeli officials have relied on a script built around making mistakes or identifying excesses or failure to meet high standards, usually delivered by English-speaking spokespeople while the real work went on out of sight. But when the National Security Minister is publicly celebrating soldiers who shoot surrendered men and telling Parliament that he wants hanging on the statute book for Palestinians, that script becomes much harder to sell in European capitals, where courts are now facing detailed genocide, torture and apartheid dossiers. You can see this tension in the way some Israeli politicians and commentators are starting to complain that he is harming Israel's interests or handing ammunition to Israel's enemies. Because from their perspective, the problem is not the torture or the killings, it's the loss of the deniability. So if you're looking for a way to frame all of this, it's not just another depressing catalogue of his racism. It sits in that collision between his need to flaunt cruelty and the way that flaunting is accelerating Israel's isolation. He wants to turn that noose into a badge of pride, a message to his base that he's not afraid to say the quiet part out loud about Palestinians. And everything about his conduct at the Knesset committee shows that. But in doing so, he's forcing every government, court and institution that still does business with Israel to decide whether they are endorsing that badge he's wearing as well. States that have already moved to bar him personally or to list Israel as a security threat or to freeze arms sales because of the risk of complicity in war crimes are not doing that because they suddenly became anti-Israel. They're doing it because people like Ben-Gvir have made the underlying violence impossible to dress up. That's the reckoning he is overdue, and it's starting to arrive sideways through entry bans and legal designations and court filings, even if no one in his own coalition is willing to say the words to his face yet. You do not have to be optimistic about Israeli politics to see that there is a crack here worth pushing at. A minister whose record includes 110 dead detainees, an underground jail reopened for Gaza prisoners, public backing for summary executions, and a live campaign to put Palestinians on death row is not an asset in the eyes of European legal systems that are already under pressure for turning a blind eye to genocide and torture. Every time he boasts that soldiers did exactly what was expected of them, when they shot surrendered men, he ties the army's fate more closely to his own. And every time he pins a noose to his lapel in front of the cameras, he ties Israel's diplomatic standing to his brand of open fascism. This is not a story about just one unhinged minister, though, but about a state that has allowed him to speak for it, and is now discovering that some parts of the world are finally starting to answer back. If Israel insists on making Ben-Gvir the face of its security policy, then the noose he likes to wear is going to keep tightening around his own reputation, its alliances, and eventually its impunity. It's not like this is the only place where Israel is leaving itself vulnerable in a self-inflicted fashion, though. It's been censoring the news to its own people, the news that they receive, for years, able to do so by broadcasting in Hebrew, of course, and only Israel speaks Hebrew. So Iran has now suddenly decided to set up a digital Hebrew news channel, all of its own. And Israel suddenly finds itself at risk of its people actually hearing news that they don't want them to. And they can't do anything about it either. Find out all about that story here. Please do also hit like, share and subscribe if you haven't done so already, so as to ensure you don't miss out on all new daily content, as well as spreading the word and helping to support the channel at the same time, which is very much appreciated. Holding power to account for ordinary working class people. And I'll hopefully catch you on the next one. Cheers, folks.